Gamescom 2019 hype and more coming up on today's episode of Lace and Tech News. Hey Gadgeteer, you're just in time for the latest episode of the world's only 3-in-1 show on tech, gadgets, and gaming news. That's right, this is Lace and Tech News. My name is Taylor Merrick, and if you're new here, hit that subscribe and follow button right now so that you don't miss the next episode. We do this on the daily around these parts, and we'd hate for you guys to miss out on all the news that we have to discuss today, of which the biggest feature story that we have today are, Gamescom is happening over the next 3 days, kicking off kind of tonight, bringing in the big old hype. We got a lot of articles regarding Gamescom 2019. You guys will want to be in your seats with a bag of popcorn and your favorite drink to take part in the news that we will divulge to you, unless you've already been watching some of the stuff already. If you haven't, we'll recap you on all of it. Also, we'll be taking a look at Apple TV Plus, reportedly costing $9.99 a month and launch in November. Oh dear. We'll speak on that more later. We'll also be looking at Dell launching a 55-inch Alienware OLED display, essentially a 4K monitor at 120 hertz with some deep, deep blacks. And you'll know more about that once we get into it. We'll also be taking a look at, Reddit decided to jump on the live stream bandwagon. What could possibly go wrong? Also, we'll be taking a look at the Alienware, how it ditched the black, boxy gaming designs for something completely radical. Unless you've been following Alienware recently, know exactly what's going on behind the scenes, or been keeping slightly up to date with what's going on with everything Alienware. Don't worry, we'll keep you in touch and current with what is going on. And in some gaming news, we'll be taking a look at Google Stadia pushing some exclusive potential players to data centers. And finally, we'll be taking a look at Sony agreeing to acquire the Spider-Man video game developer Insomniac. Yeah, that Sony exclusive that was released. They went, hey, guess what, guys? We're going to buy you now, yoink! But before we can get into that, let's take a look back on today in tech history. All right, today is August 19th, 2019, and on this day in 2004, Google holds its initial public offering, its IPO, selling over 22 million shares at a starting price of $85. Google shares closed that day at $100, just slightly over, and the IPO created many instant millionaires and a few billionaires. This is kind of a repeat of what happened with Microsoft back when they launched their first IPO. Granted, if you had been in there at the time to buy stock in Apple, buy stock in Microsoft, buy stock in Google, guaranteed you would have been pretty darn well close, because they're well worth a million, but you would have held on to it for a while, and you can't just cash out just right away. Obviously, the people who made it to be millionaires and billionaires are the ones who had the most invested into the company, as it were. And finally, on this day in history, in 1934, computer pioneer Gordon Bell was born. Digital Equipment Corporation innovator Gordon Bell was born. In his 23 years at DEC, Bell developed several of the company's most successful mini computers, as well as its well-known VAX machine. One of the world's top architects for computers, Bell is considered by many to be the father of the mini computer and is also an authority on supercomputing. The author of several books, Bell's awards include the National Medal of Technology and the IEEE von Neumann Medal. Gordon and Gwen Bell are co-founders of the Computer History Museum. And with that out of the way, let's head on over to our feature story. Oh, man. All I've heard this entire week, and I'm not sure about you guys, is Gamescom 2019. For those of you who don't know, Gamescom is kind of like the place to go in the later summer when you want to find out about more game announcements, a lot of other companies who couldn't make it to E3 or other conferences during this time. We usually make an appearance around here. Any games that didn't happen to make it in the earlier release cycle or development phase to be able to be public will usually come around this time and be announced, as well as maybe a conference or two later in the year. But everybody likes hyping up Gamescom, so we'll be taking a look at that. Gamescom does not officially kick off until tomorrow, August 20th, and runs until Saturday, August 24th. And in case you're wondering, it is held in Cologne, Germany. But that's not the main reason why everybody tunes in, like, oh yeah, I want to go to Gamescom. Well, they want to know what games are coming out of Gamescom. So we have the 18 biggest game reveals from Gamescom's first ever keynote, including, get this, Kerbal Space Program 2. I know at least one individual who's super pumped about this news. They wouldn't shut up telling me about it. I'm like, okay, I get it. I know you love the game. I don't really, I'm not a fan, but I'll listen to it. They love the first game, so they're drooling over the second one. But is Gamescom the new E3? A flood of new game reveals were announced in a two-hour keynote hosted a little bit earlier today. Now, with E3 and what appears to be a slow death spiral, there's a push to make Gamescom the new tentpole summer event. Well, okay, I wouldn't see... I'd slightly disagree with the author here on this one, but it's opinion, so I'll let him say it. When will that happen? Well, pretty skeptical, but it does mean a new showcase for trailers closing out the slow summer months with a bang, and it's kind of why Gamescom is so big. For 2019, Jeff Keighley hosted the first Gamescom opening night, a sort of companion show to his annual Game Awards in December. They even managed to sandwich the trailers between awkward award presentations, if you can believe it. If you watched it live, it was hilarious indeed. First of, Gears 5. At E3 2019, Microsoft chose to focus on Gears 5 multiplayer mode and just multiplayer. It's a bit of a weird choice, but Gamescom finally gave us a Nine Inch Nails backed look at the campaign, so you finally have a story trailer looking at Kate Unleashed, our first in a while. And yes, there's a trailer that goes along with this. Matter of fact, with all the articles that we're covering today, if you guys want the show notes, head on over to technewsgadget.net, and there you can click on any link that you want and watch any of the videos or look at any of the pictures. If you're listening to the podcast, now, obviously, if you're watching later on YouTube or watching on Mixer, hi, you can see me in video, which is beneficial for some, I understand, but we won't be watching any of the trailers today, unfortunately. Second game to come out was Comanche. THQ Nordic loves resurrecting old games. First announcement of Gamescom opening night was Comanche, a reboot of the helicopter dogfighting series that hasn't been an entry since 2001's Comanche 4. Oh yeah, so they upped it. They have a gameplay teaser video. It's a modern team-based online multiplayer helicopter shooter set in the near future, according to the game's website. And for those of you who love racing games, oh, you're going to drool over this one. Need for Speed Heat. EA swore that there would be a Need for Speed in 2019, but didn't bring one to E3. That made Gamescom the gameplay debut of this game, which looks like it'll revolve around a player-controlled day-night cycle, police chases, and usual car customization, but in terms of competition between Forza Horizon, it could be using someone in theory that should be Need for Speed, but the last few Need for Speeds have been kind of mediocre, and according to at least the author, Heat hasn't shown them the anything different that they would be interested in. Fingers crossed, though, but there is a gameplay trailer up nonetheless if you guys want to drool over cars. Also, speaking of Kerbal Space Program, the second one was announced. Not quite sure what you would do with a space program sequel to improve upon the original, maybe make the interface a bit less impenetrable. Building forward bases on other planets, more exploration, all of that seems like it would be a very cool addition to what's already one of the best simulations ever made. They have a cinematic announced trailer available for you to watch as well. For those of you interested, also, Little Nightmares 2 is coming out, wrapping the same puzzle light, run to the right mechanics in a surreal world. Reminded you a lot about the Ghibli film Spirited Away. Didn't expect really a sequel coming out of Little Nightmares. But I guess 2 is on the way. Another game coming out is Predator Hunting Grounds gameplay reveal. The Friday the 13th crew lost the license about a year after releasing that game. Now they're back with Predator Hunting Grounds, a similar asymmetrical multiplayer, but using the Predator license. So we'll have to see how this one looks like. Gameplay reveal seems pretty interesting. Hopefully history doesn't repeat itself with this one. Also, for those of you wondering, yes, Monster Hunter World technically has an expansion out next month, the Chili Iceborne, though you wouldn't know it if you're a PC player. Capcom's still sticking to the staggered release cycle, so this release Although they teased it here, it won't be coming to PC until closer to the end of the year, and possibly later than that. But you can admire it from afar, though, courtesy of the trailer, or just, I guess, buy it on a console that does have that feature. Also, there's another game coming out called The Cycle. Jaeger's Sweeto Space Combat game Dreadnought came and went without much of a splash. Now it looks like they're returning to what they do best, aka shooters. It's being billed as PvEvP. You've heard of that before, a blend of competitive multiplayer with co-op quests or something versus everything. Don't really get the gist of it, but it's on Epic Games Store in alpha status currently, and they have a trailer to go along with it. Also, Humankind was officially announced. Amplitude's turned out some of the strongest civilization competition of the past decade or so, with Endless Space and Endless Legend upending the 4X genre in creative ways. Now they're taking aim directly at civilization, though, with Humankind due to start charting the same beginning of history to space and beyond path as Sid Meier's storied series. Curious to see whether Amplitude can finally out-civilization the real Civilization 6. Interesting. Also, Everspace 2 was announced. This is a game worth drooling over. Never really played Everspace, but it sounds like it had an interesting loop, a blend of FTL's node-based map with actual 3D combat. Maybe this one's coming out in 2021. Pretty sure that this game, even though this is an announcement trailer, is the first confirmed 2021 announcement, so we won't be seeing it for at least another year or two, but if they play their marbles right, this could be a really nice one. I mean, look at the graphics. I'm only looking at the picture of it. Also, FIFA 20. Told that people in Europe really love soccer. Maybe they really like people breakdancing with soccer balls as well. Not really sure that's the implication of this Volta football announcement. Possibly. The animation is quite impressive. We'll give them credit on this one. But will it stand up and keep people interested? We'll find out. I know at least one person in Europe who is kind of runs the gambit at a whole FIFA circuit, at least on Twitch. So we'll see how that game rolls out. I'm pretty sure he'll probably buy it. Hopefully it doesn't have the same bugs that the previous year did. And then remember this game that I came out with an announcement I want to say about like a month or two ago, Disintegration. Yeah, if you didn't, you're really missing out. I talk about a whole collection of stories on a regular basis. Disintegration was one of the trailers that we actually watched. One of the few that we watched live on the show. Actually did a video of it as well. But Disintegration is a new shooter from Marcus Lito, one of the creators of Halo, and it looks a lot like it. Literally thought it was a Destiny trailer at first. The resemblance is uncanny. The guy even rides a definitely not a sparrow kind of little mashup or kind of like laugh off over at Destiny. But they finally came out with it. The announcement trailer, the official trailer. The only trailer we got prior to this that they teased us with was a spaceship that the camera literally rotated around, and that was it. And by literally, I mean literally. Like, the camera just went like that around the spaceship, and that was all we got. Now we finally have an announcement trailer so you guys can watch it and enjoy. Also, Guilt? Something like that. Guilt is a Stadia exclusive, so it's kind of weird showing up on a Gamescom opening night presentation radar and not, 2 hours earlier in Google's own Stadia presentation that they had there as well. Curious about it, if only because it's coming from Tequila Works, which between Rhyme, Invisible Hours, and, it's going on a run right now. We'll see how that game turns out. And obviously, speaking of Destiny, Destiny 2 Shadowkeep trailer dropped, Season of the Undying. I actually saw the trailer myself. I actually was tuning in at that time. Not much more to be said about Shadowkeep, especially in light of a trailer at Google's presentation this morning. It's a lot to do about an expansion that releases in just a few short weeks. Cross-save compatibility arrives next week, though, so if you've been looking to jump from console to PC, you definitely can. And if you happen to hear any crying in the background, that's my daughter. She's tired and going to bed shortly, so nothing I can do about it. I don't have a studio that I can record this stuff in. I record it in-house. And that's how you know the production value is on point. Also, Erica, an interactive thriller game, big budget FMV game on a stage at Gamescom? Well, that's what it appears to look like. It's the first time that it has appeared since Paris Games Week 2017, and it's one of those, it's out right now, reveals. So if you guys are interested, it's out on PS4 right now. Interesting. Okay, I guess that's how you're going to announce that one. Like, literally looking at it going, what? Oh, okay, I guess it's out. Also, Port Royale 4 was announced. It's been almost a decade since the last Port Royale, a colonial-themed city builder-slash-trade series. Not sure if a new iteration is as appealing in light of Anno 1800 releasing later this year, but Port Royale 4 did have one of the more creative trailers in today's presentation, centering on a barrel of rum as it's loaded onto a ship, then dropped into the ocean and finally turned into materials for a fledgling colony. Interesting concept. Also, Iron Harvest is an upcoming real-time strategy game set in an alternate history 1920s with mechs. That's about all you need to know. It's like Company of Heroes, but a little bit weirder. It's got some faux vintage footage at the beginning of the trailer, which really sets the stage for it. It kind of makes you think of Iron Man to some extent. Really interesting to see how this one will turn out. And then there's Death Stranding. There's a whole bunch of trailers that dropped out. Death Stranding, for those of you who don't know, is due out in November. In a scant few months, we'll know what in the world Death Stranding actually is. But for now, another impenetrable footage dump with creepy baby handprints, invisible babies, babies as equipment, and all sorts of babies. Strap in for 20 minutes of nonsense, or just watch the hype reel that they made for the show. It's somehow even wilder than Death Stranding. So, that's all that's been hyped up so far at Gamescom 2019. So far, we'll have to see how it actually turns out later this week. Alright, moving on to some more news. Apple TV Plus will reportedly launch this November and cost $9.99 per month. But the catch is it's only launching with five shows. For those of you who don't know, the company has yet to talk more pricing or release date, despite announcing it back in March of this year. But as this window puts Apple's product right up against the launch of Disney Plus, it seems like a whole bunch of more streaming services are all competing and launching all at the same time, saying, well, everybody wants to watch it on my platform, and my platform, and my platform, and my platform. Soon, everybody's going to go, this is kind of like watching TV, isn't it? I like the whole bundled feature, you know, where I bought cable, and then I had access to, like, 15,000 channels, and in reality, I'm only going to ever watch, like, three or five if I'm lucky. While I really appreciate Disney Plus coming out, Apple TV Plus coming out, and Netflix currently out, and Hulu currently being out, and Amazon Prime all currently being out, I think I'm only going to stick with the ones that I have currently. I don't know how you guys are feeling about it. Let me know down in the comments section. I'm not impressed. Like I said before, Apple's are adding pluses to everything, as it seems currently, and this was one of the products that I'm not too thrilled about. If you're thrilled about it, let me know. Otherwise, we'll just have a bum stream the rest of the time here, because currently I'm live streaming this over on Mixer.com/TechNewsGadget. According to Bloomberg, Apple is looking to reach $50 billion in annual services revenue by 2020, and the launch of TV Plus is integral to that milestone. Come November, the service will arrive with only five shows. The Morning Show, featuring Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon. C, featuring Aquaman's Jason Momoa. A production called Truth Be Told with actress Octavia Spencer. Steven Spielberg's revival of Amazing Stories. And a documentary series called Holmes. Not really a robust lineup, and Apple is reportedly going to be adding in more at a pace slower than soon-to-be rivals like Netflix. However, Apple has attracted a number of other big names, including Oprah, who's planning on bringing two documentaries to TV Plus, and reportedly spending hundreds of millions of dollars on The Morning Show and C each. However, Apple's reported $6 billion in original content spending, a massive increase from its initial $1 billion pledge 2 years ago, pales in comparison to the more than $14 billion Netflix is expected to spend this year, and a nearly $24 billion Disney is expected to shell out for streaming and theatrical releases. That said, Apple does not appear to be launching its service later this year with any kind of bundle in place. That may make its five-show lineup for $10 a month a hard sell against something like Disney Plus, which is launching on its own platform for $6.99 a month, and will also be available with Hulu and a stripped-down version of ESPN thrown in for about $12.99 per month. Methinks I wonder, maybe Apple should have partnered up with somebody instead of going out on their own. I don't know. Then again, I'm not the bigwigs at Apple, so I could be completely wrong on everything going on currently with Apple TV Plus. But for me, this is a laugh. But I had to cover it. I had to, you know, for fun and giggles. You're welcome. Moving right along, for those of you interested in some gadgets, we got some news. Dell launches a 55-inch Alienware OLED display. Essentially, this display monitor is 4K at 120 Hz. How does this line up? Well, today at Gamescom, Dell has officially launched its new flagship OLED gaming monitor, the Alienware 55. First demonstrated back at Computex, the display uses a 4K OLED panel featuring a 120 Hz refresh rate, making it one of the fastest 4K monitors available. It supports variable refresh rate technology, and what sets it apart from OLED UHD TVs, yet not in its HDR implementation just yet. So what are we talking about here? Screen size and all those specs that you guys like hearing about? Well, Alienware 55 is based on a 55-inch OLED panel featuring a 3840 by 2160 resolution, 400 nits peak brightness, a 130K to 1 contrast ratio, a 0.5 millisecond gray-to-gray response time, as well as a 120 Hz maximum refresh rate. Oof. The monitor also has anti-reflective coating with 2H hardness for additional clarity when used in bright days. The key feature set of the Alienware 55 is a combination of its technologies as well as its size. OLED computer displays are rare in general, and this one is the first OLED monitor for gamers. The product is not without its caveats, though. Despite the use of OLED technology, it is not an HDR monitor. In fact, it says nothing about supporting HDR10 or Dolby Vision transport, so it appears it won't support any HDR input formats, but here's all the rest of the stats for those of you interested. The Alienware 55 comes with three HDMI 2.0 inputs, as well as one DisplayPort 1.4 connector. So, looks like other larger displays, the Alienware 55 also comes with a remote control to adjust brightness, regulate audio, and perform other operations. Now, for those of you interested in dates and pricing, it will start sales of the Alienware 55 on September 30th at a nice $4,000 US. Now, I'm not making that up. I mean, if you looked at some of the pictures of this, have you seen this? Have you seen it? Are you looking at the monitor right now? If you're not, you're probably listening via the podcast. YouTube.com/TechNewsGadget is where you can see the video, but look at this thing. Oh my gosh, 4,000 monitors just for this monitor. One of the first ones, though, 4K. Oh man. Yeah, definitely a monitor to drool over for those of you gamers. Hoping to at least reach this point to be able to afford these monitors. We'll be able to afford one or maybe rent one eventually, but time will tell. All right, moving right along. Apparently, in more news, Reddit is now letting you live stream. What could possibly go wrong? Well, on Friday, a series of cryptic posts began to appear on a subreddit community, seeming to materialize out of nowhere. On public access television, anyone can be a star, read one post. A GIF with a text overlaid on a grainy background. Today, we live in a society where many choose to have a televised voice. What was this subreddit? Who knows? No one knew, but Redditors began speculating right away. What is this? Someone explain. Is somebody messing around with us? Well, one user got to work sleuthing and stumbled upon a subdomain with a phrase, Reddit Service Streaming Backend. Reddit, it seemed, was planning to launch some kind of streaming service. With a little more digging around the source code in the Reddit app, they even found what it could look like. Today, so can everyone else. Head to Reddit's front page and you'll find the all-new Reddit Public Access Network, where you see warm-blooded Redditors giving a rare glimpse of the other side of the screen. This is Reddit's first taste of live video, and as such, RPAN is a limited-time experiment set to run from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. throughout the end of this week. Consider it a tease for when Reddit launches live streaming for real in the coming months. Now, for those of you new to all of this, for more of its, well, virtually all of its 14-year history, Reddit has been a text-only platform. What began as a link-sharing service quickly grew into a destination for online discussion, where communities, big and small, formed to talk about everything from, well, everything. Even as Reddit introduced support for photos and videos, leading to the formation of more communities, text has remained central to Reddit's identity. But in 2019, it's hard to be a platform without live video. Twitter has Periscope, Google has YouTube Live, Amazon has Twitch. When he introduced Facebook Live in 2016, Mark Zuckerberg described it as having a TV camera in your pocket, an idea that seduced both users and advertisers. For Reddit, which has been on a path towards modernizing its platform since co-founder Steve Huffman rejoined the company 4 years ago, live streaming felt like an obvious next step. We know that our users are familiar with streaming across their internet experience because they're seeing it on other platforms, says Alex Leh, Reddick's VP of Product. It's become an expectation that a platform should offer this. But exactly how to bring it into Reddit was a question. Should it look more like YouTube or Twitch? Something else entirely. Well, eventually the team decided to start with something temporary, using the team's best guess for what might work and what might not, and offering a lot of leeway to course correct if things go wrong. Currently, the network will be tightly curated with no more than 100 concurrent streamers that run for no longer than 30 minutes each. Redditors will be able to upvote and downvote streams and participate in live chats during the broadcast. Anyone can start a broadcast, which will use the rear-facing camera by default, an incentive for Redditors to show the moments they're in rather than going straight into selfie mode, although you can turn on selfie camera mode as well. Streaming on other platforms can be sort of like, I'll just turn on a camera. We think Reddit will lend itself more towards shorter form content, capturing something that's really interesting in a moment so that users can cycle through and see a bunch of different perspectives. My thoughts right off the bat, instead of doing that, you want to know what this would be great for? AMAs. That's what I think. Have some bigwig come on for an AMA. Boom. Live. Everybody can upvote, downvote, type in the comments, do it live. Right there. Immediately. That's initially what I was thinking of here. I could be wrong, but that's more what I'm thinking of here. Not the, here's what's going on currently, and let's go turn on selfie mode. Oh, why did you want to do that? You know, show what's going on. Well, no. People want to know what's... whatever. Apparently, if I have to explain it, the concept is lost on them. But I think this bodes very well for AMAs down the road. And I think if Reddit hasn't figured it out already, they most likely will be based on the feedback they get from this moving forward. All right, moving on to some more gadget news. Alienware dared to ditch black boxy designs for something radical. And what you're looking on the screen right now is unique... computer tower box by Alienware. Now, you see, gaming designs tend to have a distinct look to them, and it's a formula that's rarely deviated from. They're black, boxy, and RGB laden, and it's kind of getting a little bit stale right now. Alienware wants to change it all. Throughout 2019, the company has been rolling out the largest transition in its design language since its founding in 1996. Alienware caused a new aesthetic legend, and it touches everything from its gaming laptops to its new Aurora R9 desktop announced today at Gamescom. Prior to the launch, head designers at Dell and Alienware gave Digital Trends the exclusive story on its plans to not only revolutionize its brand, but gaming design at large. Now, back in 2016, designers at Dell were tasked with a seemingly insurmountable goal, create a gaming system that didn't look like anything you'd find on the market from a competitor. The directive came from Alienware co-founder Frank Azor, who has since left the company to become the chief architect of gaming at silicon maker AMD. And looking at the current state of gaming design, it's not hard to see why. Intuitively, he thought the industry was looking very similar. Everyone was arriving to a similar design place, and Frank asked us to go into research, look into it, and ultimately see if there's a better direction for the future of Anywhere. So we embarked on a one-year journey, and out of that, Alienware was born. Man, and born it definitely was. But you see, these concepts have always been present in Alienware designs, but with Legend, the inspiration feels like a complete reboot. The team took cues from movies such as Independence Day 2, The Matrix, Tron, Star Trek, District 9, WALL-E, Interstellar, Lucy, and more. It's not uncommon to see different manufacturers talk up this type of inspiration in marketing materials, but with Legend, it's more than just lip service. With palette in hand, Dell moved on to internal testing to show how these sci-fi themes resonated with its audience. By the fall of 2017, development journey for the Alienware Area 51M laptop was underway. And the article goes on to explain inspiration that they got from other places. And here's what they initially settled on. After all the testing and everything was said and done, here it is. Yeah. Words like risky and brave get thrown around the tech space quite a bit, but these new designs definitely stand out. Not everyone will like that. Of Alienware's bold Legend design, Wiles admitted that it is kind of polarizing. That's especially with the unique shape of the Aurora R9 desktop. Some people absolutely love it. Others may not. In gaming, you see, it's supposed to be that way. People love it. People don't love it. We love that about it. And gets a lot of conversations going. So I think one could say here with Alienware, I think the model that they took from all of this was boldly going where no aliens or humans have gone before. What they were seeing is a lot of square boxes, and they wanted to create a bold design that stood out. They're not a vehicle for the latest processors or graphics part of the equation, but our customers want something greater than what they buy into the Alienware brand. It's not technology for technology's sake. It's a brand, Alienware. I mean, it evokes it from the name itself. And here's a break-apart view of the new desktop tower. But the article goes on to explain some other things, some really, really sci-fi designs going into it. Oh, man. Now, for those of you who really like nice, well-designed, different gaming towers and laptops and the whole gambit, you're going to like this redesign. That much I can guarantee. I've always been a fan of Alienware computers because they were different. That was why. That was the main reason they stood out. They're different. They look cool. They're sci-fi. They're futuristic. They broke the mold. That's the main reason. And they also have a video that goes along with it. But if you guys are interested, that's all we're going to cover for now. But if you want to read the rest of the article, this is an exclusive on digitaltrends.com. We will have a link in the show notes. All right, moving on to Google Stadia. Exclusives are pushing the potential players to data centers. You see, in a clarification on Reddit this evening, Robot Entertainment CEO Patrick Hudson said that Orcs Must Die 3 would be a timed exclusive for Stadia, but the company wouldn't say how long that timing would last. This is a relatively standard setup for third-party exclusive games these days. But are you excited to get back to the silly tower defense action of Orcs Must Die with the series' next upcoming sequel? Well, you better be ready to do so via streaming a high-speed internet connection. That's because Google and Robot Entertainment announced today that Orcs Must Die 3 will be a Google Stadia exclusive when the game launches in spring of 2020. In a Stadia Connect announcement that covered a bunch of other things too, Robot Entertainment CEO Patrick Hudson said Google invited his team to check out Stadia back in January of 2018, well before the service's public announcement earlier this year. Right away, it was a fantastic experience. I immediately saw it as the next transformation platform coming to the industry. So, of course, with all that and then the announcement and everything else that goes along with it, Stadia players will, of course, be subject to a Stadia's bandwidth requirement, which start at a recommended minimum of 10 megabytes per second, as well as potential added latency from the internet round trip to and from Google Stadia's data centers. That's par for the course for Stadia games, but as a Stadia exclusive, Orcs Must Die 3 won't even offer potential players the option of downloading a local copy to play without an internet connection. You'll be streaming the whole thing. While Orcs Must Die 3 is the highest profile exclusive announced for Stadia thus far, it's not the first one to be revealed. Back in June, Google announced Overcooked-style party game Get Packed as a Stadia exclusive. Rhyme developer Tequila Works also announced moody platformer Guilt as a Stadia exclusive that month, but the company later threw some cold water on that announcement. And there's a bunch of contradiction going on back and forth, with initially a statement being given to Eurogamer saying, "We haven't confirmed that's an exclusive just yet. Question we cannot answer." But with cloud gaming, particularly the idea of computing being shareable across multiple CPUs in a data center, this transition to gaming being data-centric is going to be a really fundamental shift, and we're interested to see how this is going to all stand up. Yeah. We'll see how it turns out for Google Stadia, at least here. And finally, a little quick bit of news here coming to us from Bloomberg. Sony agrees to acquire Spider-Man video game developer Insomniac. Sony Corp agreed to buy Insomniac Games, the studio behind last year's hit Marvel Spider-Man exclusive, as part of a push to stay competitive by acquiring independent game studios. The studio, based in Burbank, California and Durham, North Carolina, was founded 25 years ago by current CEO Ted Price. It has a long history of making games for Sony, including Ratchet & Clank, a sci-fi shooting game, and a Spider-Man title, which has sold over 13.2 million copies. Obviously, financial terms weren't disclosed. Sony's PlayStation remains the top-selling gaming console worldwide, but like the rest of the industry, it's grappling with the global success of Fortnite, a broader shift towards free-to-play titles. Now, see, tech giants Apple and Facebook and Google have also stated their intention of getting deeper into the business, and traditional game developers such as EA are introducing subscription services, making even their top titles available to customers who pay them monthly subscription fees. So obviously, Sony was like, why don't we buy Insomniac and then we can control the releases and we can make more money? See, that's what I'm thinking. If you guys are thinking something different, let me know down in the comments section. I'd love to hear your guys' thoughts, but I think that's about it. I don't have any other articles to cover, and no, the article doesn't cover anything else. All right, looks good. And with that, that wraps up this episode of the Latest in Tech News. Thanks for tuning in, guys. New episodes every weekday. Latest in Tech News can be found on every major platform, including Apple, Spotify, Google, YouTube, Stitcher, Overcast, and more. Now, if you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to let us know by clicking that like button and by leaving a comment if you're watching today's video via YouTube. If you're listening out via the podcast, head on over to Apple Podcasts and leave a review, or leave it in the app that you're currently listening on. Also, double check that you are subscribed so that you don't miss the next episode. I'm your host, Taylor Merrick, and remember, for the latest in tech, gadget, and gaming news, visit technewsgadget.net. Pretty much, keep being awesome, guys, and I'll see you on the flip side.